Don't look under the internet.
Guess what's behind the fake screen?
Now I'm gonna. That's a game we should play like every week.
I should. Yep.
I should come up with some new strange object to put behind me every week.
You should, and then just and get then get rid of the fake screen.
Yeah.
I love that. Honestly, if you want to surprise Mike when he comes back with that, that would be fantastic. He would love it. He's a game show enthusiast.
He is a game show enthusiast.
He played a fucking game show host for D&D.
It's time for our weekly segment, What's Behind Moot?
Speaking of what's behind Moot, welcome to Don't Look Under the Internet, everybody.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
It's a podcast.
It is. What, Doug, what type of podcast is it?
Horror comedy.
It's an internet horror comedy. God fucking damn it.
Horror internet comedy.
Internet horrors.
Internet comedy horror.
Horrible internet comedy.
It is a horrible internet comedy. Yes. No, that's a more accurate representation.
We're a rom-com podcast.
Sometimes.
True.
We are meet cute.
What?
It's a famous staple rom-com.
Meet cute.
Yep.
Cute meet.
Okay.
Jason, my dad watches Hallmark, okay? I can't don't judge me.
Do staples meet each other?
I hope so.
Rob Schneider.
I've never seen the movie.
Is a staple.
Rob Schneider.
Rob Schneider. It's
fantastic.
Oh,
well,
man.
Before we get into our topic, should we do some Diluty?
Clap above your head.
Butt cleaning.
Hell yeah.
Today, we've got
some patrons, guys.
Spooky to scary.
Hell yes.
Spooky.
A spooky.
Scary. Spooky,
I wonder
scary,
if,
scary.
I wonder if this is the somebody I went to college with, because he had the nickname Spooky parentheses to scary.
Maybe.
You should
ask them.
Hey.
They're right there.
Spooky.
You could message them on Patreon.
Spooky, did you go to Monmouth College between the years of 2008 and 2012? Because if you did, I'm sorry for a lot of things.
Stocks. We also have Ray McKenna. Hi, Ray McKenna.
Hey, Ray.
That's R-A-E, not R-A-Y.
Why does that sound like a wrestler's name?
It might be.
Ray McKenna!
Yes.
And we've got Major Bear.
Major
it's
Bear.
Like Major Laser, but with bears instead.
Major Bear. Is that like the difference between like Ursa Major and Ursa Minor? Like constellations?
It's like having a major clue.
And raging about it.
Oh, I've got such a bear right now.
That's
a different podcast.
Let's follow your bear.
Oh my god!
All right,
I can't.
It's already becoming.
Thank
one
you
of
guys.
Those nights.
Thank you so much for supporting us in any way you can, but monetarily primarily.
Thanks for giving us money.
Absolutely,
I hope it's worth it.
Absolutely,
your money goes to great causes.
Didn't we? What did we do? We just talked about a way to use our money. What was that?
Oh, I recommended that if you really love us and support us,
that's right,
that you give us money because we need a 24/7 Dwayne cam so that you can just see my fat cat in the corner of our streams just chilling.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, just hanging out.
It's like, I don't know. If you're on the video,
I feel like we can milk so much money out of
that.
Video,
that black blob in the background is just my fat sleeping cat.
He cleans beards.
He's pretty chill. He doesn't even know.
You need the cam of the door they fight through at night.
Oh, God.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
The fight cam.
Like, somehow keep score.
Just call it the Thunderdome.
We have a lot of options, people. We have a lot of options.
We have ideas, but not the time to execute them. But welcome, welcome, welcome to Don't Look Under the Internet. Once again, Mike is being a dad. Being everybody's dad, really. But
gross.
but more
being one person's dad in particular.
No, he's
specifically that person's dad.
You want to name one father that Mike is in reference to? A man named what? Charles. He's your dad. Charles, if you're listening, Mike is your dad.
I bet there's more than one Charles listening to this.
That's the beauty of it, Matt.
We're going to have a...
We have to have a meeting of the Charles, like the meeting of the... I don't even remember what their name was, but that guy... That guy organized the Facebook event.
The battle of the... Yeah,
every Charles that listens to Diluti, we're going to have a battle. Figure out which one of you is Mike's son.
That'd be fantastic. It'd be like our March Madness version 2. This time it's better.
Charles Madness.
Much better.
Yes. there's no way to segue from where we're at right now, is there?
I have no idea.
I have no way to do it.
This one.
I just can't.
Matt, give us something.
You have anything?
Today we're doing the Harbinger experiment.
That's as good a way as any.
That's perfect.
If any of you guys have heard of the Harbinger experiment, you will know how terrifying it is. It falls in the vein of human experimentation. If you know anything about MK Ultra, this falls into a similar vein. It's just strange.
Strange is an understatement, just for sure.
Weird.
It's just weird. It's weird.
It's a little weird.
Jimmy's man.
Doug, do you have anything to say about this before we actually talk about it?
Well, there's going to be a lot less us talking about it and a lot more you talking about it. But that being said,
don't give away the meta too early.
There's a cat underneath me and I freaked out because I was not sure what was sniffing my foot. Anyways.
You need cat cameras attached to
him. That's what I'm saying.
If Doug had the Dwayne cam, he wouldn't have been surprised by the fact.
This would have been Jack cam.
Okay, so this is after Dwayne cam.
Yeah, this is.
Either way, we have to start somewhere.
We need two cat cams.
It's like
cams.
Streamer House.
Yes.
But cats.
But for cats, yeah.
But to get us out of this, let's first cheers to our audience.
And our new patrons. Thank you for listening.
We're doing our drunk shenanigans as we do. Cheers to you and come on her. Just straight to the chase. If you hear a clink, you also drink and dink it and sink it and hey.
Come on her. I didn't bring any liquid this week because my life is in turmoil.
$50 Patreon tier. Help Matt
get out of turmoil.
Do that.
Move Matt to Illinois.
It's not really turmoil. It's planned turmoil.
All right. So let's talk about some fucked up science experiments. All right. So we're going to be listening to a story about three test subjects. And what's going on here is basically we're going to try and see if we can prove the existence of supernatural phenomena. All right.
Okay. Where are your dowsing rods?
They're downstairs, and I'm not allowed to touch them when I've been drinking.
Really?
Here's a story about dowsing rods, actually.
Ooh.
You reminded me, so I have to tell it.
Please.
I was selling my house, which is why my life is in turmoil right now. And it has a septic system, and there are pipes that come out of a septic tank called a leach field,
where the water
actually drains out.
Mike is intrigued.
And so, like, there aren't any records of where these things were buried, and the people that were buying the house were like, we want to know where these are. And I'm like, well, I don't fucking know. God knows where they are and where they were buried. Like, and I called a bunch of different people who basically told me to get fucked. And one person was like, yeah, I can find it. And I was like, great. And he's like, I'll be there tomorrow morning. And he shows up, and it's this old-ass dude with a Vietnam War veteran hat on, gets out of his truck and yanks out two dowsing rods and just walks out into my yard and is just, like, walking around in the yard with this old dude following him around. He's like, spray there, spray there, spray there. And in, like, 5 minutes, he comes back, and he's like, found it. And I'm like... He's like, that'll be $100. God damn it.
Holy, are you telling me that if you own a set of dowsing rods, you can make $100 an hour?
You can also use them to find water.
Yeah.
Not just spirits.
Well, I mean, I guess it's like, that's like actually like an old, like, wives' tale, I guess, that
I think that's
you
where
can
the name
find
comes
water
from.
In like this, buried objects.
This man
with divining rods
had to have played you.
Oh yeah, he did. I thought for a moment about being like, no, I'm not gonna fucking pay you. And then I was like, this man may actually be mentally unstable, so you know what? It may be worth $100 to just get him off of my property.
You're just like, sir, get off my lawn.
I'm sorry. I wish the thought of the conundrum of, is this man divining water or is he mentally handicapped? I wish that dilemma came across my desk more often.
I think we found our new game show.
Mentally handicapped or
finding water.
Or finding water. Holy
Jesus Christ.
This has nothing to do.
It never does, man.
It's today's episode, folks.
It never does. All right, let me transition us out of here.
You got this, man. I believe in you. We were just talking about a crazy water man.
So
like, let's go.
You'll like today's topic if you're familiar with the movie From Beyond, because boy howdy, the similarities are glaring in this.
Yep.
But that being said, if you haven't seen From Beyond, there's warning now. If you're squeamish or don't care for fuckery,
gore,
turn back.
Yeah.
Don't go forward, or at least
trigger warning fuckery.
Yeah. Trigger warning fuckery. That's the best way to put it. So, as many of you have guessed, these tests will probably not go very well, right? We're not gonna talk about a science experiment that goes
that
right,
great.
Right? So let's just hear the story from the point of view of someone who is actually hired to help run and oversee all of these tests. You think that's good?
I think so, yes. And especially considering the Harbinger. So when I say the words Harbinger experiment, not only does that bring like a sense of doom, but like no one knows what the fuck I'm talking about. The word Harbinger has like doom attached to it, kind of. So you know there's something sinister afoot, but
Matt, define spooky. Harbinger.
Just off the cuff.
Warning. It means warning. It means like a sign of danger.
100%.
Cool.
I was
really just trying to throw you off, but that's perfect.
But
thank
no, that
you
was,
for that.
Yeah, foreboding.
Well, you looked at your screen and I was like, does that mean he's looking at me?
I am, actually. You're just this little square in the corner of my screen.
I saw a glint in Doug's eye. I think, Matt, just be on your game for the next like 45 minutes.
I'm always on my game, man.
Ooh. All right.
All right, y'all. Well, can you endure the Harbinger experiment?
That's a good question. Should we let them find out for themselves?
Roll the tape!
The following is the only surviving audio entry from one Dr. Data Expunged, one of 15 hired individuals to help oversee and aid in the success of something known as the Harbinger experiment.
The world we live in is full of things we don't understand. Being the curious humans that we are, we naturally try and seek these things out. Doing so has led us to remarkable discoveries and inventions that we never could have imagined 100 years ago. We have defeated disease, built to the sky itself, and even created machines that could take us beyond the clouds into the stars. If our ancestors could see us in what we have created, I'm sure many of them would see us as gods. Our innate curiosity and lust for knowledge has not always led us to greatness, however. True evil and darkness have also been uncovered in humanity's conquest for knowledge. And in the end, I fear this evil will be our doom. I do not say this from the standpoint of a great philosopher who has sat and simply pondered things either. No, I say this because I've seen it, experienced it. I was a part of it. The event I am about to relate to you is true in its entirety. This I swear. I feel certain that this will fall on deaf ears, and many of you will believe this to be just another spooky story meant to give you cheap thrills, but I promise you, this is neither my intent nor my purpose. The purpose of this story is to simply warn you of what lurks beyond the veil of what we can see and understand, to show you what awaits us in the darkness, even if I myself don't understand it. What I am about to tell you has happened, and I feel certain it will happen again. In 1971, a not-so-well-known scientist began preparations for an extremely secretive project known simply as the Harbinger Experiment. I would like to keep the identity of the scientist a secret for personal reasons, so throughout this recounting, I will refer to him as Zimmerman. Zimmerman's background is unclear at best beyond 1971. All that is known about him before that time is that he had grown up somewhere in Maryland with a strange fascination of the occult and supernatural. This later made him an outcast among his fellow scientists due to how scoffed upon the metaphysical world was, and still is at the time. Zimmerman's opinions concerning the otherworldly were not the sole cause for him being an outcast, though. It was his methods that made him widely unaccepted among his peers. Zimmerman was well known during his time for being ruthless and cold beyond measure. He never cared about the means. All that mattered to him was results, and if he predicted the results to be valuable enough, anything would be worth obtaining them. It was this insatiable and brutal lust for the truth that made him feared among those that knew of him. And the few that knew of him and did not fear him believed in him and followed him in his work closely. The word harbinger itself has such a mysterious and intimidating taste to it. Maybe it's the way it rolls from our tongues, or maybe it's simply due to its association with the project, but the word always seems to carry a certain amount of doom with it. Which would make sense. The word itself means to warn or forebode. I can't imagine Zimmerman's reason for giving the experiment this title, but in retrospect, it fits perfectly. Zimmerman came to a select few, me being one of them. He told us he was working on something big, and that he needed some people who could keep confidentiality and not spread idle gossip of his work. While he did not fully trust some of us, he did know that we were professionals, and that for some reason or another, we were all in dire need of employment. I had worked at the local clinic as a doctor, but I was caught stealing medication and promptly fired. This left a very dark mark on my resume, so work was hard to find. I was also a native to Alaska and lived near where the experiment would take place, so I guess you could say I was a convenient choice. As you can imagine, I jumped at the opportunity. It was hard not to when I saw the payout. 15 of us were hired in total. Some were colleagues of his that had been working with him for a while. Others were maintenance workers, and a few were hired as private security. I was the only medical professional to be hired. It's still a wonder to me how he even attained the funds necessary for the experiment. I would not wholly be surprised if his financing was not entirely legal. But, legal or not, I needed the money he was paying. Looking back, it's a decision I have come to regret. After Zimmerman obtained his money, he used it to buy a relatively large plot of land deep in the frozen wilderness of Alaska. And upon that piece of land, Zimmerman built a complete structure, not dissimilar to a bunker, in fact. The sole difference being that its goal was to keep any potential damage contained within the structure, rather than keeping it out, as he put it. Most of the structure dug underneath the earth, which had the effect of making the underground complex seem so much smaller than it really was from the outside, as would be expected. There was only one way of entering and leaving the underground structure, and it was via a ladder that led from a small, unassuming concrete building on the surface, which I will refer to from now on as the entrance building, for convenience, to the network below. After everyone had gone to bed at night, the hatch that contained the ladder would be sealed off with a very large and thick metal lid. Zimmerman was very strict about this. Located not too far away from the entrance building was a series of wooden cabins that would serve as the sleeping quarters for the staff Zimmerman had hired. Compared to the entrance building standing on the surface, the underground system was massive, At the center of the complex was the control room. This is where all the facility's electronics and such were linked to. This included security cameras, lights, door controls, etc. Consoles, monitors, and computers lined the walls of this large central chamber. This is also where the ladder in the entrance building connected to the underground complex. Connected to the control room were three doors. One led to a similar room that served as the infirmary. Another door led to a break room, and the last door led to the hallways. Hallways are where the complex began to feel extremely eerie. They were, for some reason, laid out an extremely confusing scheme that led in circles and to complete dead ends. These hallways made up a vast majority of the complex, and it would be very easy to get lost in the maze if you were unfamiliar with the complex. But if you knew where you were going, you would find yourself standing before one of three 8x8 rooms before long. Each room had a camera hooked up to one of the corners of the room, and all three of those cameras were connected to a corresponding monitor in the control room. Cameras were also scattered throughout the hallways, so that whoever was watching their corresponding monitor could see anywhere they wanted to, when they wanted to. Thick metal doors stood at the entrance of each of the 3x8-foot rooms, and in order to open them, you would have to enter a 4-digit code into a panel located near the door. I remember when I first arrived at the complex, how badly the hallways frightened me. I've always been claustrophobic, you see, and those hallways were so very narrow. The noise, or more accurately, the lack of it, was also a tremendous source of fear for me in those bleak, narrow hallways. It was always so unnaturally silent, as if the entire world had stopped moving. It really made you feel like you were trapped down there. Thankfully, though, I only rarely ventured into those hallways, for I was the only medical professional in the facility, and I had virtually no reason to go into them. In the beginning, I found it so peculiar that Zimmerman would ask for a medical professional like me on a project like this, but by the time it was all over, I understood why. The official purpose of the Harbinger experiment was to test and observe the effects of extended isolation on the human mind. This is what was listed on reports being sent out, at least. But, unbeknownst to all those who were not participating in the project, excluding the subjects, the true purpose was much, much darker. Like I said before, Zimmerman had always had an obsession with the occult and the supernatural. He sought to prove himself to those who did not believe in him. He wanted physical proof that the supernatural was a real phenomenon. He wanted to be the first one to attain said proof. The true purpose of the Harbinger experiment was to find proof of the metaphysical, a world we could not see. The thought of doing this was naturally a tad bit daunting and even scary, but it was Zimmerman's method of doing so that was truly terrifying. Zimmerman believed that he would be able to open a portal between worlds momentarily, allowing three random entities to cross over into our world. And each one of these beings would be trapped within one of the three rooms. Zimmerman had the theory that any entity would try and latch onto the nearest living thing that had the capacity for it. He wanted to use this technique to trap a spirit in a physical form by allowing it to enter a living being that had been injected with compound mixture of Zimmerman's creation. In theory, this compound would keep the entity from simply leaving whatever it was attached to. The only way it would be able to leave a host who had been injected with the compound was through death. According to Zimmerman, the host would have to be something living, with a will strong enough to survive the possession. There's only one known species that possesses the amount of will required for this. Humans. Zimmerman had also done something to ensure that the entities would only enter the three rooms, and that there would only be one entity in each room. Though I cannot say I know what exactly he did. In fact, I know next to nothing when it comes to how Zimmerman managed to do what he did. He liked to keep his methodology a secret to his most trusted colleagues, most likely due to his paranoia that some would steal his ideas and take credit for the success of his said ideas. If I had known that this was the true purpose before I signed up, I may have reconsidered. But Zimmerman decided not to tell us until we were all gathered at his fortress. Even if any of us wanted to leave, I doubt we would have been allowed to do so. The security team Zimmerman had hired was loyal to him and the payout. It is not likely that Zimmerman had given them the order to now allow anyone to leave. There were three different subjects included in the experiment. All were native to Alaska, and each one was lured into the project under the belief they would be participating in a harmless study of the effect of isolation on the human mind, as I mentioned before, which is why none of the subjects objected when they realized they would be confined to one of the three rooms that I mentioned earlier. The first subject was a young man. He was apparently out of work, and desperately needed the money that had been offered for participating in the study. The second was a woman. By looking at her, I could tell she was an addict of some sort. The third and final subject was an older man, a drifter if I had to guess. One thing that they all had in common was that none of them had any family or friends left. In short, no one would miss them, which is why they were chosen for the project. I am sorry, I wish I could supply more information about the subjects, but all of this has been drawn from memory, and I was given little information on the three to begin with. The experiment did not officially begin until 1987, 16 years after its original announcement. I was eager to begin, so I packed up and headed out to the complex as soon as I could. I arrived at the compound a week before the subjects had even signed up, and a whole month before the project even began. I was not the first to arrive by any means. When I got there, Zimmerman, his colleagues, and the security team had already arrived. I suppose you could say I was among the people Zimmerman did not trust to arrive first. Everyone had arrived about a week before the experiment began. There was a noticeable rift between those who were simply there for the money, like me, and those who were followers of Zimmerman. On October 15th, 1987, all the preparations were in place. The subjects had been sealed in their rooms, the cameras, lights, and speakers were fully operational, and all the staff members had settled in. The time had come for the experiment to officially begin. Zimmerman asked everyone to report to the control room around 9 p.m. to witness the beginning of the experiment. He wanted everyone to be present when he proved that all his theories had been correct and that he was not just a madman. He wanted us all to see the fruits of his labor. When everyone had finally gathered in the large control room, Zimmerman turned to us and simply said, "Observe." When he turned back to us, leaned into the microphone that would project his voice through the three rooms, and then he began chanting in a strange language that I feel certain no one but Zimmerman could understand. We all observed the three large monitors on the wall, silently waiting for something to happen. The subjects all stood in their room, dumbstruck by Zimmerman's chanting, staring at the monitors with confused expressions on their faces. After about 5 minutes, I felt something awful. I cannot explain exactly what it was, but a horrible feeling of dread washed over me, riddling me with fear. It was then the ground actually began to shake subtly, and the lights began to flicker. Zimmerman continued chanting to the microphone as if nothing was off or wrong, while the subjects began dashing around the room, screaming for help. Then suddenly, the ground stopped shaking, and the monitor's image turned to static. The air began to become very heavy as we all stared at the monitors, waiting for them to regain their image and show us what was happening or had happened in those three rooms. For a while, all was silent. But then there was screaming. The screams of a woman going through unbearable pain and terror began to echo through the compound. The similar screams of men began to coincide with the woman's terrified screams, and together they mixed into an awful symphony of pain and fear that beat mercilessly into our ears. Those of us who were here for the money began to give each other scared looks, while those loyal to Zimmerman seemed completely unfazed. We wanted to leave and never come back to this awful place, but we all knew deep down that Zimmerman would never allow that to happen. We were here for the long haul. There was no escape. It was 10:13 p.m. when the screaming finally stopped. The monitors had yet to reveal to us what had occurred in those three rooms. As soon as the screaming ended, Zimmerman stood and dismissed us all for the night, adding that we were all for forbidden to come back into the compound until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Not like any of us wanted to, anyway. We all solemnly made our way out of the compound and towards the cabins and settled in for the night. I feel it is safe to say that not all of us slept well that night, and I was not one of them. The following morning, all the staff had arrived at the entrance building. We all stood inside, exchanging tired or nervous looks as we waited for Zimmerman to arrive and open the hatch that concealed the ladder. I could see palpable fear in the eyes of some around us, while others did not seem to have been even remotely affected by what happened last night. Zimmerman showed up 5 minutes after 10, apologizing for his tardiness as he came through the door of the entrance building. He opened the hatch and, without any hesitation, began descending the ladder downward into the black abyss. He almost seemed enthusiastic. I was the first to follow behind Zimmerman's dark descent into the facility. It seemed that the farther I climbed down, the more darkness closed in on me, as if it was trying to swallow me whole. And as I climbed deeper, I couldn't help but feel that this place was... It was different somehow. While before, there was only the unsettling concrete hallways and rooms. Now there was something else. Something made the eeriness feel real and personified. I felt like a horrible and gruesome scene awaited us down there, but I continued climbing downward, despite my fear and my hesitation. This was no longer just a spooky bunker. There was darkness and malevolence in the air. A true evil now lived here, and I could feel it. We all could. I finally felt my foot touch ground and let out a silent sigh of relief to be on solid ground. Almost as if on cue, the light bulbs came alive, dousing the room in their warm and welcome light. Zimmerman must have turned on the power, I thought. I allowed myself to take a couple seconds to examine the control room. It was exactly as we had left it last night, for which I gave a silent and thankful prayer. It was almost as if nothing unusual had ever happened. I shook myself from my thoughts as I remembered the static-filled monitors from the night before. I let my eyes slowly make their way towards the monitors on the wall, anticipating the grim and fearful scenes that would be on them. My attention was first grabbed by monitor 1 and 3, which were still pure static. It would have been a small relief, but then the motionless image on monitor 2 caught my eye. Room 2 was entirely still, and everything seemed entirely untouched. I couldn't help but gasp as I noticed the only thing that was different. The woman lay in the center of the small concrete room. An expression of fear and terror was frozen into her gaunt face as she lay silent and lifeless on her back. Zimmerman's expression turned angry when he saw this. He ordered that second monitor be turned off, and it was. We didn't ask why. It's not like any of us wanted to see the dreadful scene any longer. He also ordered that if the images in the monitors 1 and 3 did not return within the next 2 hours, the security team would be sent to investigate the rooms. The security team nodded at hearing this. They made it seem as if they had no fear, but I could see it in their eyes. The subtly loud tick-tock of the clock was the only sound that echoed through the control room while I stared at the monitors. An hour and 50 minutes had gone by, and static was still all that occupied monitors 1 and 3. All of the other staff members were working except me. This was due to the fact that the project had been completely injury-free thus far, so I essentially had nothing to do but wait for someone to hurt themselves. Zimmerman, a couple of his colleagues, and I were the only ones that occupied the room. They quietly chatted amongst each other on the other side of the room, while I spent my time reading and pondering the situation I currently found myself in. I had clearly made a mistake on coming here. The corpse lying in room 2 was evidence enough of this. God only knew what had awaited us in rooms 1 and 3. My thoughts were soon interrupted as monitor 3's image returned. The clear image, now displayed on the screen, made everyone's eyes noticeably widen. What was displayed on the monitor was horrifying. A humanoid thing stood in the center of the room, staring directly at the camera, unmoving. He was wearing the jumpsuit that Subject 3 had been issued, but this clearly was not the same man that had entered the room. What caught my attention first was its eyes. They were solid black and twice the size of normal human eyes. They seemed so endless and cold. Its head had also grown with its eyes in such a symmetrical and unsettling manner. The being also had shed all of the hair it once had, and even from the monitor I could see how unnaturally smooth and clear its skin was. It had also seemingly grown in height and stature, which could be seen from the fact that the jumpsuit was now obviously far too small for its wearer. Its limbs had grown especially long. Its arms hung almost as low as the creature's knees. What we were looking at was in no way the same man we had sent inside. Fear. Fear was all I felt as I continued to stare into the monitor at the thing in the room. My fear seemed to be shared by those around me, which made me feel kind of good. It may sound awful, but it was a bit satisfying to see that Zimmerman and his colleagues could feel fear too. But at the same time, it was worrying, because this showed that this was not part of Zimmerman's plan. Something had gone wrong. We all stared into the monitor at the thing despite our fear. It was almost as if we were in a trance. My already present fear began to grow and spread rapidly through my body as I became lost in the creature's eyes, trapped in its terrifyingly hypnotic gaze. After what felt like forever, I managed to break eye contact with the creature and divert my attention from the monitor. And when I did so, I felt my fear levels drop considerably. After a short while, Zimmerman ordered his security team to make their way into Subject 1's door, just as he said he would do. The security team left without question, armed only with batons and pistols. I focused my attention on watching the men progress through the hallways towards Subject 1's room via the cameras. Even through the not-so-high-quality cameras, it wasn't hard to tell that these men were afraid of what awaited them. Their heads were downcast as they walked. They did not possess the same confidence with them as they did when this project began. They looked like scared boys being sent off to a terrible war. Eventually, they made it to the door. We had perfect vision of them and the door via the hallway camera. One of them said something through their walkie-talkies and made a motion towards the camera. In response, one of Zimmerman's colleagues buzzed the door open. The men already had their pistols out by the time when the button was pushed. Slowly, the door began to open. We all watched eagerly as the men began to approach the door, guns aimed inside. Suddenly, and without warning, there was a loud shriek, and something bounded out of the room at the men. The monitor turned to static. Immediately, we could hear screaming echoing down the hallways, followed shortly by the distinct sound of gunshots. We could do nothing but wait. After a couple of minutes, the screaming and gunshots stopped. We all waited and prayed, hoping that whatever bounded at them from the door would not be the one to return to the control room. After a couple more minutes, three of the men came back, carrying with them the corpse of the fourth. He had massive cuts covering his chest, and his face was shredded. You couldn't even tell who he was anymore, or even that he was human. I was used to gore, being a doctor and all, so I felt somewhat unfazed by the mass of shredded flesh and bloodied meat they carried with them. But many of the others went pale and vomited. The security team all wore emotionless expressions and eyes filled with terror. One of the men finally looked up at us. He stared at us for a while with those wide eyes of his. "It's dead," he finally managed to mutter in a shaken and scared voice. A couple hours went by. The dead man's name was Frank. He was buried outside in the cold Alaskan ground. Two of the men were unharmed, physically at least. The third was alive, but only barely. His body was covered in bloody slashes, and one of his eyes had been gouged out. I managed to stabilize him, but only just. The other two men vaguely explained what happened. Apparently, Subject 1 leapt out at Frank after the door had opened. Only, it wasn't really Subject 1 anymore. According to them, it had a hideously contorted face and long, sharp claws. They claim to have shot it over a dozen times before it fell dead. Then they emptied another dozen bullets into it just to be sure it was really dead. Only once it was dead did they come back. After tending to the wounded man, I went to investigate the monitors. As afraid as I was of seeing what those monitors may have held, I needed to see. Subject 3 was the only one left now, and I needed to see it and make sure the creature was still in the room. It seemed to be more like a jail cell than an ordinary room at this point, though, which was probably a good thing. The cameras displaying Subject 1's room and the hallway outside still displayed static. No one was sent to repair them or investigate. We just had to hope that Subject 1 was well and truly dead. Monitor 3's image was exactly the same as I had left it. Subject 3 was still staring into the camera at us. He was still in the exact same position, and if it were not for the small fan in the corner of the room, I would think I was looking at a still image. In a way, I felt relief at seeing this. Relief that he was still in the room and had not escaped while no one was looking. I noticed something especially unusual. There was a strange sound emanating from somewhere. At first, it was barely noticeable. The only reason I heard it was because of how extremely quiet it was in the infirmary. But as time went by, it slowly began to increase in volume. After about an hour, it was loud enough that everyone else could hear it too. And after a couple more hours, its volume had increased so much that we could determine what noise it was. It was a song. One of the staff members identified it as Living in the Sunlight by Tiny Tim. Apparently, his father loved the song and listened to it frequently. The song seemed to be on a loop and kept replaying itself. Although we were able to identify the noise, we remained unable to identify its source. We knew it wasn't coming from the speakers because we had turned them off. It seemed to be emitting from the walls themselves. More time ticked by as we all began to become increasingly agitated by the song. I spent most of my time in the infirmary attending to Frank or in the control room. Fear hung in the air, and the presence of unmistakable darkness and evil was no doubt its source. Subject 3 had still not moved. He kept his unblinking gaze fixed on the camera the entire time. It always felt like he was staring directly at me, no matter where I was in the room. I think this effect was also felt by the others, due to the fact that they seemed to move around the room a lot, and for seemingly no reason. After a few hours, the song was so loud that people almost had to shout in order to communicate. We'd been trying to find its source so that we could turn the song off, but to no avail. The source was completely unidentifiable. This added a level of extreme irritation to our already very present fear. It was around 8:30 the ground began to shake once again, just as it had done the previous night. Panic began to spread among my fellow employees and me as the shaking grew in intensity. During this, I had the sudden instinctual feeling to look over at Subject 3's monitor. It was gone. Almost as upon cue, the power went out, and thankfully, the song did as well. Ever since the security team came back, panic had been slowly building up among the staff, and Zimmerman was powerless to stop it. When those lights went out, the calm projections that everyone had been trying to maintain left us, and the fear in all our hearts took over. The emergency backup lights kicked on shortly after the power went out, which I gave a silent, thankful prayer for. The lights were dim, but they still allowed me to see a lot. Total panic seized us as many of my fellow staff members began screaming and rushing to the ladder in attempt to escape. But too many were trying to use it at once, and no one was able to get very far on the ladder without someone else pulling them to the floor and taking their place. Zimmerman was shouting for everyone to calm down, but his dominating and intimidating personality had no effect here, and his demands fell upon deaf ears. It was total chaos. It wasn't long until people actually started hurting each other in their desperate attempts to get up that ladder and out of this place. I could only stand against the wall and wait for my opportunity to escape up the ladder. All the screams, were soon silenced as the familiar hum of that unsettling song began to rise in volume again, only much quicker this time. And this time, it was clear that the noise was coming directly from the maze-like corridors. People stopped fighting and shouting as all our attention shifted to the door that led to the hallways. The song quickly got louder than it ever had been before, which forced many of us to cover our ears with our hands in an attempt to silence the noise. Then, suddenly, the song just stopped. Silence. That was all that filled the room, as we all stared at the thick metal door in anticipation for what was coming. It felt like ages had gone by, but in reality, it was probably only seconds before the silence was broken. The door suddenly and violently burst open, and the music started again, louder than it ever had been before. The suddenness and the volume of this caused many of us to recoil by falling to the ground and grabbing our ears in an attempt to block out the noise. I glanced up for just a second, and in the doorway stood a tall, smooth-skinned figure with long limbs and eyes so dark and malevolent that you could clearly see them in the dim lighting. After I got my bearings, I looked upwards at the creature once again, just in time to see the thing pick up and rip Zimmerman in half in one fluid movement, dousing the room and everyone in it with his blood, intestines, and organs. I was no stranger to gore, but the sight of that was too much for me to bear. I hunched over immediately after seeing this and vomited all over the cold cement floor. The ladder. The ladder is my only hope of survival, I thought to myself as I forced myself to a standing position. And as my eyes rose along with the rest of me, I could see the thing ripping and tearing through people as they scattered in an attempt to escape it. It was distracted. And as awful as it sounds, this was my only chance to get up that ladder. I forced my legs to move towards the ladder, trying to block out the terrified screams of my fellow staff members and the unbearably loud music. I could hear gunshots coinciding with the screams and terrible sounds of flesh being ripped apart somewhere in the mess of noise. I reached my hands outward and felt a wave of relief wash over me as my fingers came into contact with the hard metal rungs of the ladder. I gripped them and began to climb upward as quickly as I could in my disoriented state, all the while praying that the monster would not see me and pull me off the ladder and back to the slaughter. It felt like at any moment I would feel one of its smooth hands wrap around my ankles and pull me to my death, but I eventually made it to the top. There was no question in my mind. I had to close the hatch and seal that thing down there, even if it meant certain death for my colleagues. I could not allow that thing to escape. I gripped the thick metal lid and began to push with all my might in an attempt to seal off the underground complex. Despite how dense and sturdy it was, the lid was surprisingly easy to move and did not take very much effort to push it over the hatch, even in my weakened state. In seconds, the hatch was completely covered by the dense metal lid. I collapsed on my side and began to vomit some more as exhaustion overtook me. As I lay there, I realized something. Aside from my labored breaths, the only thing I could hear was the faint echo of that song from down below. I felt as though I would lose more of my sanity if I continued to lay there and listen to that song. So, I once again forced myself to my feet and began to make my way to the wooden lodge that I had stayed in the previous night. It was there I had left my baggage, and also where I had the keys to my truck. Of the 15 staff members that took part in that forsaken experiment, I am the only one who survived. I have never returned to the awful place where all of this happened, and I don't intend to. The project was very secretive, and Zimmerman was the only one who knew all the details of it. And, as far as I know, no one is aware of my involvement aside from me. In fact, I'm probably the only one who knows what the Harbinger experiment truly was, let alone what actually happened. By now, you are probably wondering why I have told you all about something none of you should be aware of. Maybe you're expecting me to give you a speech about not messing with things you don't understand, or something along those lines. I hope not, for I have no speech to give or lesson to impart. I began hearing a noise earlier today, Almost immediately, I recognized the noise as a very haunting and familiar song. I didn't even try to trace it to its source. I knew it would be pointless. As the days progressed, the song has increased in volume. It's loud enough now that I can very clearly make out the lyrics. I am completely unable to escape Tiny Tim's voice. It has followed me everywhere I have gone. Subject 3 is coming for me. And I know my time left in this world is extremely limited now. I guess you could say I just wanted to tell the tale of the Harbinger experiment before it was lost forever. I hope that you will take some lesson from what I have recounted to you, but I think we both know you won't. Let's be honest. You don't believe a word of what I've just told you, and I don't blame you. I wouldn't believe me if I were you. To you, this is nothing more than something to get your cheap thrills from. You were probably mindlessly surfing the internet when you clicked the link and found yourself here, wherever here may be, listening to this story. And to be honest, I don't care if you believe me or not. Even if you do, it probably won't stop you from trying to uncover the truth of a darkness that few of us have ever seen. It certainly never stopped Zimmerman. If you want a lesson, look at what happened to him when we were seeking the truth. I pray that none of you will ever discover the truth. I pray that none of you ever have to see the evil I have seen. I hope you all get to live in ignorance of what lies beyond the veil, of what we can understand. It's here now. I can feel its black eyes burning into me, just as I could all those years ago. I am as much to blame as Zimmerman is for the monstrosity that is now free to roam the world. Even if I was not the one to create it, I'm sorry. Please forgive me.
Oof. My fucking God.
Wowie zowie.
There it is.
God.
There we are.
Damn it.
There we are.
Wowith of the Zowith.
So, that was the entirety of the Harbinger experiment. A very, very, very closely monitored isolation experiment.
Neat.
Yes, yes. It was very neat.
There was a lot.
I like the part where people got ripped in half.
That was a good part. I mean, there's a lot of things going on in this whole fucking story. And the majority of it has to do with something called human isolation.
I preferred the part where a lot of Tiny Tim was played
over and over again. We did find out that Tiny Tim sings the song Tiptoe Through the Tulips, and that song
Insidious.
Yep. Yup. And that song is now public domain. So.
Oh, fuck it.
So get ready for 30 minutes of on loop.
Just that.
I'm just going to play it in the background of this episode and like build it gradually.
Please, please do that.
Yes, Matt. Yeah. He gets
the whole thing.
Yeah.
He gets it. He fucking gets it.
Well, that was the story of the Harbinger experiment. It is all about human isolation and the effects on one's brain if being in isolation.
If isolation
is brain,
then brain. If drugs, then brain.
Think that people, do you think that like some sort of demonic force latched onto these people?
Oh.
Or
demonic? I don't think demonic.
Why not demonic?
Well, that's just like too. That's too.
What else is ripping people in half?
It's too biblical, you know. Like it's too like by the book. If there's gonna be a name, this
it's
thing
too cliche.
I guess yeah. I mean, do cliche things actually happen? Not really.
I mean, it depends on what show we're watching.
Okay, what show are we watching?
Are we watching
right now?
Supernatural?
Are we?
Because if it's supernatural, then we're definitely going biblical.
See, I don't know.
It explains a lot of things.
I understand that isolationism, like, is a way of life, and there are certain people who take that very seriously. But also, I've read several studies on humans being by themselves for extended periods of time, and it never ends well. It always ends similar to this.
Well, yeah, I guess that's why they say, like, you know, when you get, what's it called? When you're in jail and they, like, put you by yourself for a long time.
Solitary confinement.
Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah, that's why it's a punishment.
And then they always come out and rip people in half. It always happens.
There's always claws involved, and, you know, the unseen force rips you in four different pieces. That's what solitary confinement is.
It sounds kind of kinky. And that sounds like we're kink shaming at this point.
We're not kink shaming.
What do you think he injected him with?
That is it. Oh my! I'm so happy you asked that. I don't know. If I had to guess, I would say ketamine.
Yeah.
Honestly, I would say ketamine.
I've meth, ketamine, and fentanyl.
That's ketamethanol. Fair.
Ketamethanol. Is it a new drug?
I've seen enough people in a K-hole before.
Yeah, no.
To where that actually kind of makes sense,
right?
A little bit.
the amphetamine spiral exists right here.
I mean, it's giving off very big Russian sleep experiment.
Oh,
vibes.
Absolutely, uh-huh. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's just a Russian sleep experiment, but we did it three times. Right.
Yes, exactly. So, like, I guess this kind of leads into the question is, do people perform these kinds of experiments on actual living humans?
See, but that's the biggest thing is we don't know. Why would we? Because shit like
this
happens.
They're doing it underground in Alaska.
Yeah.
And it's all secret, right?
It's off the books.
So, okay, let me ask you, both of you, as human beings that are a part of Earth, do you guys think that these types of experiments are being performed on living human beings?
Not anymore.
How about the
Russians and the Germans were up to some crazy fucking shit.
Yeah. That's
Nazi science is batshit. You are correct.
That was actually what I was going to bring up. And I forget the exact name of it. What were those like fucking crazy World War II experiments they were doing in Japan? Do you know what I'm talking about, Matt?
Oh, I know what you're talking about, but I don't know what.
I can't remember the name of it, but like they were like utterly.
We talked about it.
Well, we didn't. We didn't in depth, but
not
like
in depth.
they were doing weird shit where they were like, how much can we freeze this body part before like something bad happens? And it was just like really weird shit. They were just like, we just need to know
like
how the human
science.
Body works. With people that we don't care if they live or die. It's just that kind of shit. And like there's really no good way for us to know like, okay, well, yeah, like this is going on because A, our governments aren't telling us shit.
No.
They're not going to tell us if they're doing that. Like,
no.
Why
would they?
So
if they can do it without telling us, why would they tell us? Well,
it's a very loaded question.
Our government is trying to contact the paranormal by injecting people with some weird substance and like locking people inside them.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. I do not think that is the specific steps to make that happen. I do think that our government is trying to contact the extra normal entities that might exist within or without our world.
You think they just got like one guy that's on the books who's like the paranormal guy at like some government agency? And it's like, yeah, sure, man, whatever.
They keep him on the payroll, and they're just like, you are part of the X-Files, and that's the name we're going to give it, and you just have to accept it. And he's like, yeah, man, I got it. Yep.
How's it going today, Greg? Oh, I'm really close to a breakthrough. Yeah, sure. Okay, buddy.
That could be it. Yeah, that could be it. I mean, the weird shit why does the boob keep falling off the fucking... Can we just put it back?
We don't bring up the boob. I think if we were researching these things, we've probably already come to a conclusion with them, and there's probably some very top secretive sort of shit where they're just doing the things without having to experiment on people. Like some guy out there is like, oh yeah, I can shoot fire out of my hands. It's pretty sweet. Yeah. So
yeah, they got all this shit underground and they got Kane down there. Then they
yeah,
just
Kane is absolutely
time.
Yep.
Every time shit gets out of hand, they just send him in. Like take care of it.
But no, like
it's Kane.
But like these human isolation experiments, I know that there exists a legacy with that, especially in America. I know the CIA is heavily involved in shit like this. Where does this come from? Is there any like source, or is this just like a standalone experiment?
I don't know. You tell me.
Fuck, really? Okay.
Oh, shit. Oh, fuck.
I didn't actually prepare for this, but that's fine.
Neither did we.
I would say that like the basis for this, like the basis of studying the human psyche, comes from the CIA in the 60s or 70s when they were shooting people full of LSD and they were seeing what happened. It was essentially just a crapshoot. A lot of different experiments came from this era. One that you guys might know of is the Project MK Ultra.
Yeah.
Heavily involved LSD, mind control, and the possibilities of such. This reminded me so much of that. Like, from the preliminary steps of, like, make sure that these people don't know what they're talking about or what they're doing. Make sure that no one knows the premises around this experiment. Give them LSD, and they won't know. Like, it's right there. It's the one-step solution. You know what I mean?
I feel like that's even like a step lower than what we're talking about, though, because MK Ultra was, which we could really, that's, realistically leave this for an episode on.
That's
MK 18 Ultra,
hours of talking that we don't, like, need to get into right now.
Like, MK Ultra was like a cakewalk compared to this experiment.
Yeah, 100%.
And I say that because literally the people who were involved in MK Ultra, they were just dosing each other.
With LSD.
At the CIA compound. Like, they
with
were just,
LSD.
They were just doing it to each
and
other.
And, like, slipping it to each other without them knowing. And then they were, like, walking around to, like, parties and stuff. And, like, I don't feel great.
I feel bad, guys. Yeah, no,
they were
just letting you know.
They were literally, like, hey, Frank, you want a sandwich I made? Like, I made a sandwich. I got a little extra. You want some of that? And they'd be like, yeah, sure. Fucking. And then, like, all of a sudden they're on fucking like 3000 micrograms of fucking LSD or some shit. And they're just like not having,
but
a good
time.
Also,
they're experiencing normal everyday life at that fucking capacity. You know what I mean?
Actually, I mean,
in this regard,
all right, this is getting off topic as fuck. Because I have so many different things I could talk about with this. We're not doing MK Ultra. So that being said, real quick, Matt, would you give us a small TLDR of just kind of what just happened, like what we just heard?
So basically, what had happened was this guy was contacted by this doctor whose real name we don't know, who is referred to as Zimmerman, and this guy is supposed to be a doctor on this guy's team for some unknown experiment. And when he shows up, he's told that the experiment is essentially going to just be that they're going to take these people and they're going to put them in isolation and they're not going to be allowed to contact anybody for a long period of time. And they're going to monitor these people to see how their behavior changes. But what he finds out later is that what's actually going down is that Zimmerman has concocted some sort of, like, substance that he's injected these people with that he believes will put them in some sort of state where entities from other dimensions will latch onto them and not be able to escape because whatever substance he's pumped these people full of won't let them out. And so they do this and they monitor these three people for like a short period of time, and shit like almost immediately goes real fucking south. And, like, one person just straight up dies.
Yep.
And then another person turns into some sort of weird, tall, freaky thing and starts, like, they send, like, a security crew in to try to figure out what's going on with this dude because they can't see him on the security camera anymore. And he's turned into some sort of freaky fucking thing and starts attacking these people, kills one guy, and then the other three shoot it in the head and kill it. And then while they're observing the third person who's left, that guy starts apparently somehow just like making the entire complex that they're performing these experiments in shake, and then starts playing fucking Tiny Tim through the goddamn walls. And then he just escapes from his room and then starts slicing people in half all willy-nilly. And the only person that gets out of the compound is this person who's telling us this story. And then at the end of the story, we find out that this fucking thing somehow also got out of the compound that
his
he thought he had sealed him in and is following him. It follows him.
Yep.
And it's probably has probably ripped him in half at this point.
Yeah.
Not a good Tuesday.
No, not even remotely close. God.
Tuesday.
This reminds me very, very, very closely to there's another creepypasta. It's just called God, I think. And it's about somebody who essentially gets voluntarily blinded and deafened and stuck in a chamber of like sensory deprivation. There's like you can't like no senses are being had here. And essentially what happened is this person started to feel the presence of God and feel how terrifying that presence is. And just amplified, amplified, amplified. And this reminded me of this just a bit, simply because it went from like, we're going to observe these three random Alaskan native people to we are going to watch these three people turn into creatures that rip our faces apart and then also dispose of our bodies in the most malicious way possible. It's just fucking carnage and chaos.
Yeah, I wonder what Zimmerman thought was going to happen. I mean, did he just think that the being was just going to be locked inside these people's bodies? And then what? Then what was his plan?
Where was he going after that? Like, he obviously saw that his plan was, like, going well. And there was a very distinct moment where his plan went fucking awry. And he was pissed.
The moment is immediately.
Immediately. Yeah.
That's the moment.
So this is day one.
This is classic, like actually classic horror movie trope where they even said it in the story, don't mess with things that shouldn't be messed with. And it's that exact sentiment that you see, okay, we have fucking Dr. X here, Zimmerman,
yep,
trying to pull in supernatural forces from another fucking dimension or whatever you want to call it into the bodies of other people. Like there's no way this doesn't go from 0 to 100.
No,
immediately.
Right.
Like if you even like, yes, I love supernatural things and I love H.P. Lovecraft and I love all of that shit. But if there was any inkling that I thought that I could just read a couple lines of script and blast a fucking demon from another dimension into somebody else's body, you better know not to do it. Like, there's no good side to that.
There's no good side to this.
It's like a bad idea.
Yeah.
It's just bad.
Yes.
All around bad.
100%.
It's just bad.
Fucking don't do it.
You don't do it.
And that was the whole point of the story we fucking read you. Like, do not delve into the supernatural. Just fucking don't do it.
It goes beyond contacting them. It's like, if you've ever watched any sort of, like, exorcism movie or anything, it's like, the whole shit is, like, shit gets really, really, really bad when demons get a vessel to possess. And this dude was just like, here's three of them.
Yep.
Here you go.
Exactly. He's like, I got you. I am your homeboy. Get into my vessel right the fuck now.
Would you like a meat suit to ride around in? Here you go.
Yeah, no, that's exactly. All yours. It's it, no, nope, nope.
Yeah,
I don't know. The story was great, and I feel like we did
very
it some
well
justice.
Written. Very well written.
Yeah, but I don't want it to be a real thing. It doesn't have to be.
This is one of the better written creepypastas I've read.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Agreed. And so the reason it's so well written is because it is based like halfway in fact. This story takes a ton from sleep paralysis demons, which makes a lot of fucking sense. It also takes a lot from occultism. It takes a lot from supernatural entities. how to get them into this world. Like, it borrows a ton from the different supernatural worlds. And that's why it's so fucking good, because it doesn't matter what realm you're from or what, like, what you believe in, you can find some kind of truth in this story. And that's why it's so, I don't know, successful, I guess.
I think it does a good job in not being like, it's a demon or it's a fucking, it's a fucking elder god. Like, it doesn't take one trope and throw it into the story. It's kind vague. Of just like, here's what happened. Here's what I saw. It doesn't tell you what the thing is, which I think is a almost helps the story out because, you know, you've got a lot of, I mean, you can read any kind of sci-fi, horror, whatever it may be, and you can get a very specific, like, here's a demon that came out of a thing, and you hear the word demon or you hear the word like eldritch horror or whatever it may be. And you kind of associate whatever that story is with the thing that's happening. And I think with this one, it really leaves the imagination going. All you have to work with is that Tiny Tim is just a piece of shit.
Jesus. Yeah.
Just a big fucking asshole.
Just, yeah.
Public domain.
Why?
Just a heads up.
Why is his music always showing up in scary, scary things? I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence.
Through the tulips. It's just, it's fucking frightening. Like, the whole thing, it's unsettling. It's not, there's something wrong with the music. And that actually goes back to our definition of uncanny last episode.
I think that's like, the real topic of the episode.
Is it uncanny? The uncanny feeling?
No, it's Tiny Tim.
Tiny Tim.
What he up to?
Yeah. We can go over that for sure. What is Tiny Tim doing? actually, so the song that's featured, what was it called? It's Free Domain. When the Sunshine, what is it called?
Tiptoe Through the Window.
No.
Living in the Sunshine.
What is it?
Living in the Sunshine.
Living in the Sunshine by Tiny Tim. Yes.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry.
The most famous song by Tiny Tim is Tiptoe Through the Tulips, simply because it is a part of several different horror movies, few of which executed it properly, but either way, it's a fucking horrifying song. So Tiptoe Through the Tulips is a horror staple, yet they choose to go a different route with Tiny Tim. That's weird to me, right? Like, I don't know. I feel like if there's a horror trope to be had, it would be.
Sounds like they were like, hey, this is creepy and I want to incorporate it, but I don't want to do exactly what everybody else has done. So
I guess
I'm going to pick a different song.
But I mean, if you hear Tiptoe Through the Tulips, you know, like, something horrifying is coming, right? At this point in life.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe there's somebody who just really, like, unironically likes Tiny Tim and is just sitting in their house right now just spinning his records.
That's fair. I never considered that. That's fair.
I want to meet that person.
Same. I want to see what kind of person that is. Like, who listens to Tiny Tim as like a hobby?
Like, Spotify, you know? Fucking year rap fucking.
Yeah.
Tiny Tim is your number one artist. What genre is that?
I don't even know.
Just a weird shit all around.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say. Jason, do you got any like real world shit on this?
So much. I have so many studies in front of me right now.
That's good.
I have a conglomeration of 12 to 15 different professors of psychology's opinions on this kind of phenomenon. Essentially, what I found out is that all of them say, yep, none of you have the mental capacity to decide anything. You are fucked up and you have mental problems. That's what I found on this, I guess.
You are fucked up and you have mental problems.
That's what I found. So Nick Canas, a professor of psychiatry at the University of California, San Francisco, says he has reviewed more than 60 reports from studies conducted in space analog environments, such as Antarctica, submarines, land-based, and submersible simulators. So, again, going along with the isolation.
Okay.
A lot of people think they could fucking handle it. I have like 12 studies in front of me right now saying that nobody can handle it. Yeah, no, that's not happening. So again, Nick Kanas, he essentially set up a study in Antarctica for, it was a total team of 6 people, and they were scheduled on off shifts, which means each one of them had something to do while the rest of them did not. So there was always somebody working while somebody was not. Whether it was actual meaningful work or not, that's a whole other thing. But this was, you know, an experiment. Essentially, they measured the effects of hydromania. They measured the effects of
hydromania.
Yes. Which means obsession with water versus the fear of water. Triskaidekaphobia, which is the fear of number 13. There are a lot of different fears and phobias or manias that were studied in this extension of this experiment. However, I don't know how to differentiate those pieces of data from the others. So here's what was found. This person's colleagues basically called into questions the salience of such analog studies from manned space missions. So this was the basis for manned space missions, essentially making sure that at least one person aboard would make it out with their mind. Most of them, according to simulation, did not. There was one person, as long as they met certain requirements, to actually make it out alive. And alive being defined as keeping their own personal attributes about them. Like, most people that came out of this fucking test were not themselves anymore, is essentially what I'm trying to say. They did the test in zero G confines. They did the test in submersibles. I don't know how deep they went. It was all based in the Antarctic. It was fucking ridiculous. So think the thing, essentially the thing, semicolon, the experiment is what happened here. And the findings from all of these were essentially that if somebody spends an aggressive amount of time by themselves, they will lose their fucking mind. They will lose their sense of reality, and there's nothing you can do about that. What that means?
I guess you just have like no point of reference as to like what's a sane thought.
No, exactly.
You're just alone with your own thoughts, and you're just like, is that sane? I don't know. And then you can just start to believe anything, probably.
You can basically coordinate with your own brain what makes sense, but by definition, that means you are not sane. Because if you are using your own brain's like contextualization of what's happening in front of you, That just means that you're biased. That just means that you're missing something.
You have no point of contact
exactly
what other people are visualizing or experiencing, essentially. So your point of reference is just a moot point.
It's a moot point because all you see is what you see. Oh, and that's the only thing these fucking people see. And I don't know how to interpret that. How do you incorporate that into the actual physicality versus?
You take a volleyball and you draw a face on it and you start talking about that.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Like, how else do you define this? I don't know.
I think you just.
Real quick, I looked up Tiny Tim. He has 353,000 monthly listeners on Spotify.
Holy and if you go to shit.
Like the fans also like section. One of the top recommended artists is Wesley Willis. And if you don't know who Wesley Willis is, if you've ever heard the song, Rock and Roll McDonald's, Rock and Roll McDonald's, Rock and Roll McDonald's, that's Wesley Willis.
There's just a weird subset of fucking people out there listening to that specific.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I have nothing else to talk about right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've covered quite a bit of this
human
topic.
Isolation. A bunch. We touched very briefly on MK Ultra. We talked. I don't know.
I'll talk about MK Ultra for way longer, but I'm not going to.
No,
but
we can this, all this talk
whole,
about that. For
this
longer.
Whole thing, obviously, you know. I guess the last thing we can do before we just shit all of our fucking social medias at you
is
real or fake.
Are you ready, Matt?
Let me just pre.
What is real? What is
yeah,
fake?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's define.
If you think it's real, that means that you think that the story
of
is
the Harbinger
real.
Experiment, like the whole thing, Dr. Zimmerman brought three people, aside from the other 15 people he hired, down into a fucking dungeon of a basement that was essentially the fucking labyrinth.
My joke was made way less funny by Jason explaining.
I thought Doug was going somewhere.
I wasn't. I was just making a joke.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were. I'm so sorry.
I was just gonna say, if you think it's real, then you think that the story is real. And if it's fake,
wow,
the
he's
story
out.
Is
All right.
fake.
This was worth it. I'm glad we stopped and did this.
Someone needed to be the mic in this situation, and I took.
If you think it's real, you think that if somebody is enclosed in a room and a portal is opened, you can basically turn them into a clear-skinned creature that haunts your nightmares. If you think it's fake, you just think that schizophrenia exists.
You don't believe in Jesus.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. Are we ready? Are those the two criteria?
I'm not even sure where I'm at anymore. Anyways.
Real or fake on three? One, two, three, fake.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
It's because we did fucking Russian sleep experiment.
It's
because
it's a creepypasta.
Yeah.
It is because it's a peepeepasta.
Yeah. It's a penis spaghetti.
Peepeepastas equal fake.
Yeah.
I
would say yes, but one of the creepypastas that we tried to cover was Yay Video Games, and then
I don't know if that's a creepypasta.
If you go to deludipod.com or deludi.com, you will find links to all of our social media pages. There's a Twitter, there's an Instagram, there's a TikTok where we upload TikToks that are videos that you won't see anywhere else.
Correct.
If you go to our YouTube at youtube.com/@deludipod, you will see video versions of all of our episodes. And you'll also occasionally see extra bonus content that you won't get anywhere else as well. We just uploaded a video last week that is me and Jason being subjected to Mike feeding us weird, awfully flavored things.
It was bad.
And getting really drunk in the process.
Yep.
So check that out. If you go to patreon.com/deludipod, you can choose to give us money or you cannot choose to give us money. You can give us something or you can give us nothing.
Perfect.
If you see Mike just out in the wild, if anybody who's listening to this just happens to see Mike, please return him to us.
Please. I haven't seen him in months.
P.O. Box 6437, Aurora, Illinois, 60598. Or you can send other things there, and we'll open them.
We will. We did last time, or two times.
We did.
Yeah.
We opened the thing.
Address them to Don't Look Under the Internet.
Hell yeah. Or any one of us specifically.
Nope.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Well, you know what? Yeah. Address them to Don't Look Under the Internet. Not Deludi. Don't Look Under the Internet.
Don't Look Under the Internet.
Because it will get returned.
Fully spelled out. Because the postal service is
Do
stupid.
I have to go fucking fight with
Doug,
the post
what do you
office?
Want to
Well.
You can. I don't think it's going to solve anything.
I don't think so either.
You could also just go down to the post office and just put Deludi onto the list of names that we can accept.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
we could, but they've been really, really, really pushy
they've
about
been
us
so
giving,
difficult.
Giving them an EIN number.
So
and I
difficult.
Keep telling them, hey,
here it is.
We ain't got that far yet. So until then, leeching off of what Matt said, if you see Mike out in the wild, just fucking
fuck him.
Wind
fuck him. Just have sex with him.
Wind that leg up. Like, I'm talking Donkey Kong from fucking Super Smash Brothers. And you wind that leg up so till your leg is glowing. That's when you know it's done, right? And you just punt that man
do not have sex with Hamlet
just so far in the night speak and his child. I said it.
And then put them both in a box and send them to P.O. Box 6437, Aurora, Illinois.
And then call our phone number, which I don't know what it is.
939-9366.
If someone knows it, say it now.
I have to know it because I fucking get rid of it every time.
I don't, was that a full phone number? I don't think
it was. Like 630-939-9366. Once again, it is 630-939-9366. Once again, do not have sex with Hamlet.
Okay, that I'm counting don't that as Jason's turn. That was Jason's turn to say what he wanted to. Ash Vlogs Part 5. Here we go.
Welcome to Ash Vlogs Part 17.
Oh my fucking God. Guys, we love you so much. This is the end of my effort to this episode. I can't do anymore. We love you so much. We will see you next week. Doug, anything?
I already said some stuff.
Cool. Matt.
He already said some stuff too.
Bye.
Yeah, put Mike in the P.O. box. Goodbye, everybody.
Put Mike in the P.O. box. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Welcome back to Inner Night. It's great to have you here once again. To begin the night, repeat after me. I am deserving of love, respect, and happiness. My mind belongs to them now. I am capable of handling any challenges that come my way. Repeat those words as many times as you need this week. Now we have a message in a bottle from another member of Inner Night. Luna says,
do not breathe in the fog.
What a wonderful message. Your lucky numbers for this week are 104, 116, 116, 112, 115, 58, 47, 47, 98, 105, 116, 46, 108, 121, 47, 51, 111, 100, 84, 52, 55, 99. For this week, we recommend spending some time doing something creative, like painting or writing, to boost your creativity and help you express yourself. Remember, self-expression is important for your mental health and well-being. Don't forget to leave a message for another member to receive. You will join us again next week. Good night.